This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
No to U.S. orchestrated coup in Venezuela. No to Trump imbuing himself with the power to decide the leader of a sovereign country.
Hey, where the heck are the Democrats? We're going to speak now with Mark Weisbrot, co-director with Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and he's the president of Just Foreign Policy, a non-governmental organization dedicated to reforming the United States foreign policy. And Kevin Zeese, a lawyer, political activist who's worked on a wide range of issues, beginning with ending the war on drugs and mass incarceration, including helping to organize the 2011 Occupy encampment in Washington, D.C. at Freedom Plaza. And he currently serves as co-director of Popular Resistance. And I can't think of any two more knowledgeable people to bring with us at this frightening time where I am conjuring up Guatemala coups, Chilean coups, what happened in with the oligarchs and fascism in Paraguay and Uruguay, and on and on, and help us understand how it has been so easy in some ways for the BBC, the New York Times, to launch a full court press in support of regime change in Venezuela. What is it that our public does not understand and needs to? Take us into the midst of U.S. interventionism in Latin America. And it's hard to know which one of you to start with. Let's toss a coin. I'm going to say start with Mark Weisbrot. And Kevin, Mark, please, the two of you are the experts in this. Feel free to interchange.
Hi, thank you. And thanks for having me here. Just to respond to one thing you said about the Democrats, it's true, there haven't been a lot, and there's been some Democrats who have said bad things, but on the other hand, you have a handful that have been pretty good in Congress. You have Ro Khanna from California, who actually challenged Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois, who was supporting the regime change effort, and he said very specifically the U.S. should not anoint the leader of the opposition in Venezuela during an internal polarized conflict. Tulsi Gabbard, Ilhan Omar was very strong, Barbara Lee, Bernie Sanders all had statements against what the Trump administration is trying to do. So that's a start, at least, and I think it will grow, actually. I think that there is some potential for that. But overall, obviously, this is a terrible thing that's going on in the media. The vast majority of the media doesn't even give you enough information to make up your own mind about it. It is a kind of a classical regime change effort. The United States government has been trying to overthrow this government for 17 years now. They were involved in the coup in 2002. You almost never see that in the press, but the hard evidence is actually there. You have a State Department document that says that the United States actually provided training and other support to the people who were involved in that coup. You have CIA documents that were declassified showing that they knew about the coup in advance, and yet when the coup happened, the White House at the time, George W. Bush, said that Chavez had resigned, even though they knew that in fact exactly what was going on. So they tried to help the coup succeed. And then, of course, they stepped up funding from there on to the opposition, invested hundreds of millions of dollars that we know about in trying to destabilize and overthrow the government all the way to today. So this is the culmination of a long series of efforts. And it's, you know, regardless of what you think of the current government or anybody thinks of the current government of Venezuela, this is going to make things worse. In fact, the decision that the Trump administration just made which is to recognize a president, or what they're calling a president. He's actually a member of the Venezuelan Congress, and they called him, Pence called him the night before to arrange that he would declare himself president the next day, which he did. And one of the impacts of this is that if they continue on this path, the government won't be able to sell its oil on international markets. Now, the financial embargo that the United States has on Venezuela right now doesn't prevent them from selling their oil. They've threatened to take that step several times, but they haven't been able to because of the oil interests in the United States, who refine Venezuelan oil and would lose a lot of money. So this is a backdoor way of accomplishing an actual trade embargo, because what happens is, since this new president, Juan Guaido, the congressman, since he's now in charge of the country, according to them, and according to the allies that they have, which include right-wing governments in Latin America, and we can talk about this more, some of the larger countries in Europe, which is most of Venezuela's trading partners where they sell their oil, they won't be able to get the revenue for this oil. So, for example, if you look at Francisco Rodriguez, he's an opposition activist and a Wall Street economist who's the leading expert on the Venezuelan economy. He's estimated that this would cause the economy to shrink by 26% this year, which is, you know, it's like our Great Depression, only in 1 year. And that is because they can't sell their oil. And, of course, a lot of people would die as a result of this, as they're already dying from the current sanctions because they can't get access to medicines. So this is a very devastating thing that they're doing. And, of course, if they say they're trying to resolve anything there, they're going to make all the problems worse, including the refugees. 3 million people have left the country and are all over Latin America and Europe and everywhere else.
And we're speaking with Mark Weisbrot, who he's speaking to us now, and we want to bring Kevin Zeese into the discussion as well. Kevin?
Yeah, you asked, you know, why was it so easy for all this Western media, BBC, et cetera, to come on board? It's because this has been planned for a while. Like Mark said, this has been going on for, you know, since Chavez was elected. In fact, Elliot Abrams, who Donald Trump appointed to his team this last weekend, okayed the 2002 coup against Chavez, and was also involved in the Iran-Contras, was convicted of Iran-Contra crimes and Guatemala massacres, and so now he's in charge of the Venezuela transition. But the reason why this is so easy is because it's been worked on for months. Trump has made Venezuela a priority. He's focused on it consistently, and there have been numerous attempts at coups, assassinations, and regime change throughout, lots of threats of military activity. In the last couple of months, they've focused on this coup attempt. So they had, when this attempt happened, they had it all lined up. You could see the social media was ready to roll. You could see the corporate media was ready to roll. You could see the U.S. allies, the right-wing governments in Latin America and the European governments came on board very quickly. Trump recognized the coup president within minutes of him announcing he was president. So this was a planned operation. Now, it's a failed operation also already. I mean, it's obvious they miscalculated. Trump thought that the military was more divided than they are. The military has said multiple times since this coup president appointed himself that they're staying with Maduro. And Russia has said to the United States, stay out of Venezuela, and Russia already has a battalion of troops there. They had a battalion of troops there last year. They were thinking about doubling it last year because of these threats that were being made even before this coup. And what's interesting about the oil issue that Mark pointed out is China has loaned Venezuela $50 billion, and part of that is to become a partner in their oil industry. So if the U.S. goes to blockade or put an embargo on that oil industry, they are blockading China as well. So you got China and Russia involved in Venezuela. This is becoming a global geopolitical conflict. If Trump thought he would have an easy victory here to, you know, show his great leadership, he's going to be wrong about that. Then I was in Venezuela for the election last year, and my impression of the revolution there, the Bolivarian process there, is that it is broad and deep, and the people will not succumb to U.S. imperialism. Whatever complaints they have about Maduro, and there are people who think Maduro has not gone far enough as far as socialism goes, he's gone too far, have criticisms of him, they all unite around Maduro when something like this happens. And so you're dealing with a unified population of at least 30% of the public that solidly supports the Chavistas. He won 67% of the vote in the last election. It was a legitimate election. Venezuela runs really excellent elections. Jimmy Carter said they were the best electoral system in the world. And when I saw it operating, I'd agree with him. It's much better than the electoral system in the United States. There's no way there's fraud in those elections. Now, the opposition tried to undermine the elections because they knew they were going to lose. They tried to undermine the elections by boycotting them. But even with that boycott, 46% voted, 67% for Maduro. The next challenger was at 20%. He was the lead opposition candidate. So Maduro won that election, is the legitimate president, and this nonsense that he's a dictator and that Guaido is the real president does not stand up under any analysis of the law internationally, as well as the law under the Constitution of Venezuela. So this is a bizarre coup. It's a very open coup. I mean, and back in 2002, U.S. tried to hide their involvement. In this one, Pence put a video out the day before, in addition to calling Guaido and saying they would support him. And of course, then Trump had everything lined up to recognize him and move forward. So this is an open coup, and it's already a coup that's struggling. They'll keep trying. Today, the United States sees $7 billion in oil assets as a new economic sanction against Venezuela. So they're not giving up. But I tell you, the people of Venezuela will not give up either.
Mark?
Well, I think that they are doing a lot of things. I mean, the U.S. government is doing more, you know. First of all, I think most people don't realize how bad the sanctions have been.
That's right.
And if you look at, for example, they went into effect in August of 2017, the financial embargo. And that basically prevented the government from borrowing, from getting a lot of other credits that even weren't covered by the sanctions, because most financial institutions are conservative. And they don't want to take a chance of running into trouble with U.S. Treasury and getting billion-dollar fines, as others have gotten. European banks, for example, have gotten billion-dollar fines for violating sanctions against North Korea or Iran or Cuba. And so it cuts off a lot of credit. And oil production really collapsed since the sanctions in August of 2017. They've probably lost about $6 billion in revenue. Now, if you think about that, when they had a lot of money, they were spending maybe $2 billion a year on pharmaceuticals. And so that just means that, you know, millions of people can't get pharmaceuticals and life-saving drugs in a lot of cases. And, of course, the financial embargo didn't create the mess. And this is true, and I think we have to acknowledge that the government had some economic policies that failed quite miserably. And it's not socialism or whatever you see in the media, because it wasn't a socialist economy anyway. It was overwhelmingly privately owned. And even under Chavez, the vast majority of jobs that were created, and millions of jobs were created during the growth period, before 2014, when they went into recession, they were created in the private sector. But they did make some serious macroeconomic mistakes, primarily the exchange rate. They had this fixed overvalued exchange rate, and they kept it even as they developed inflation that fed back into a black market exchange rate, which kept depreciating their currency, which then fed back into inflation, and they got into this spiral, which really started in the fall of 2012, and they rode it all the way to the hyperinflation that you see today. What the sanctions really do is make the situation considerably worse, and they also are designed to prevent the government from getting out of the five-year depression in which they've lost about half of their economy, about half of their GDP, which has never happened before in Latin American history. So it's a very deep depression. It's hyperinflation, inflation at over 1,000,000% a month, a year, I mean, and they can't get out of it with the financial sanctions that the U.S. has imposed. And that's because the U.S. really wants to, they want regime change. They don't want a negotiated solution. They want to put their people there when everything collapses. And that's the part you don't see in the media. The media has for years now pretended that the U.S. government is simply trying to pressure the Maduro government to do this or that thing. It changes from month to month. It could be now, you know, they want them to call new elections. Before, it was, you know, something else. And they always try to look at it, to present it as some kind of pressure, but if you actually follow what's going on, you can see that they simply want to overthrow the government. There's nothing that Maduro could have done at any time to get relief from the sanctions.
That's exactly right. I would just add to that, Mark, that Venezuela's rejected U.S. empire. It's allied with the opponents of U.S. empire. And that is part of this process. And the reality of Venezuela's economy is the problems really go back way before. I mean, go back to when oil was discovered in Venezuela, and it became the dominant economic force that made it cheaper to buy food rather than grow it, or cheaper to buy cars rather than build them. The Dutch disease, you may have heard of the Dutch disease, which when a country has a natural resource, makes it very that creates all sorts of challenges in their finance system. With influx of foreign dollars, it makes it very hard for domestic economy, other aspects of the domestic economy, to grow. Venezuela tried to change that with Chavez and Maduro. They created all sorts of new efforts to broaden the economy, but the crash of the oil industry, the price being cut in more than half a few years ago, combined with the sanctions, was a 1-2 punch that is very hard to overcome. And the third punch was the business interests in Venezuela on the inside trying to sabotage the economy. They would hide essential goods in warehouses. They would sell food that's for Venezuela in Colombia. And Colombia or Venezuela would try to buy, for example, medicine. If they had the money, they'd try to buy it. They would be stopped from buying it because of the economic blockade. But they were told by countries that we can provide you with humanitarian assistance. Of course, the catch to humanitarian assistance is that gives the OAS the excuse to intervene because of the humanitarian catastrophe that requires intervention. So Venezuela, the government, I don't know how a government like that can function when you have the oligarchs in your country undermining it by sabotage, when you have U.S., the biggest economy in the world, blockading it, working with Western European countries and allies in the region, and then you have the crash in the oil economy, which is the basis for their economy. That's a really tough group to handle. But even with that, last year Venezuela announced they had built 4 million homes. That's enough for 8 to 10 million people out of a population of 30 million. So even with that depression, that collapse, they still focused on the poor and built 4 million new homes. And that's, you know, for almost one-third the population. That's kind of incredible. Think about what we do in Puerto Rico in comparison. But it's a very challenging situation. Maduro deserves some blame, but he's also in a very difficult struggle against very hard tides against him.
Mark, a number of countries immediately lined up against Maduro after the legislature tried to take power. But the OAS, the Organization of American States, recently has supported Maduro. Do you think that has much of an impact?
Well, it's a little bit, yeah. I think it's noticed. It's really heroic, these small Caribbean countries like St. Vincent and Grenadines, a bunch of them, they're the ones that swing the vote in the OAS, and it shows really how cowardly some of these other countries are, like the Europeans especially, that went along with Trump, because they were able to stand up. I mean, Haiti gave in because Rubio, first of all, it's a government that's kind of close to the U.S., and secondly, they weren't even going to go for it. They didn't the last vote they had in the OAS, and Rubio threatened them outright, and they had a lot of threats to these countries if they didn't go along with them in the OAS. But, you know, this is a kind of an important thing, a question that you raised, because, you know, the media narrative is kind of overwhelming. And so, and then this is really serious. You know, like, you compare it to the Iraq War, where before the war started, at least.
And I just have to interrupt you to say we have 30 seconds, but I know you can rise to the task.
Yeah. All right. The 30-second answer is... When you see this European support for Trump is a little misleading. It's all because Pedro Sanchez, who's the prime minister of Spain, switched sides and went with Trump, and Germany and some of the others follow the Spanish lead on Latin America. And so that's really what's going on there. And it's not this class of civilizations that the media presents it as, you know, where you have China, Russia, and Turkey on one side and all the so-called democracies on the other. That's what they're trying to convince people.
Well, you know what you need to do, Kevin Zeiss?
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, nope, I wish we had time, but I just want them to read your articles, Mark Weisbrot.
Well, I was going to suggest.
Go ahead. You got 10 seconds.
You go to popularresistance.org and look at our most recent newsletter. Our most recent newsletter goes through a lot of everything activists need to know about this coup is in that newsletter, popularresistance.org. Check it out.
Is.
We only scratched the surface here.
And Mark Weisbrot, where can people read your work?
CEPR.net.
And believe me, the articles are great, and we're going to continue to talk about this because no to U.S. orchestrated coup in Venezuela, no to Trump imbuing himself with the power to decide the leader of a sovereign country. And regime change, maybe in the U.S. That's about it. Speaking with Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, Kevin Zeiss, who is with Popular Resistance. And that is what we need. Thanks for listening. Stay calm, thoughtful, but agitate, organize, create that people's empowerment.
Come, you masters of war, you that build all the guns, you that build the death planes, you that build the big bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks. We just want you to know we can see through your masks. You that never done nothing to destroy, you play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes, and you turn and run further when the fast bullets fly. Come, you master,
seize the revolutionary time. Seize the revolutionary time. Seize the revolutionary time. Seize the revolutionary time. Seize the revolutionary time.
not just the name of this jam.
Why are you speaking about the war, Dr. King? Why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say.
You fasten the trigger.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.